From Courtside of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 359. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. My co-host and fellow NLSC team member is Derek. You know him as Deeper3 in the forum and Deeper384 on Twitter.
Happy to be here again. I did want to kick off the show by mentioning that I finally got around to trying Steam Remote Play together.
Yes.
I had been wanting to try it for a long time. My brother, my oldest brother, wasn't able to come over last night. So I said, hey, you know, let's give this a try. I gave him an old Xbox 360 wired Rock Candy controller, and he's using an old $200 Walmart laptop, like a really just like not a great laptop. Plugs in the controller. I'm the host, so I'm running it from my apartment, and we have a good internet connection. And on that old, dusty, poor performing laptop with that controller plugged into USB, it worked nearly perfect. He said that there was a very, very, very slight delay. But we played a full half, 12-minute quarters of NBA 2K17 doing it, and I definitely recommend it for those with a fast internet connection, because on the other end, on the back end, they don't need to own the game.
That's right.
They don't need to have a great computer either, because it's heavily dependent on the host, which was me, and I have good internet. So and I run the game really well. But yeah, he said it was working great. We played an entire half. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, I finally tried it. So
no, that's cool. It's funny though, when you talk about an old $200 laptop, of course you were talking US dollars, and of course my immediate thought is of the $200 laptops in Australian dollars, which are these really terrible machines. They've got about 64 gigabytes of flash memory. They just fill up so quickly. I don't know why they still sell them, quite frankly, Derek, because they fill up once you get a few Windows updates in, and then you can't put anything on the hard drive then, or the flash memory, and they're just so slow after 6 months, because it just fills up with updates and everything else and anything else you put on it. So, but yeah, of course, that equates to about a $400-$500 laptop here in Australia, which again is far from high range or even medium range, but we'll get the job done, and obviously gets the job done with Steam Share, because we were looking at doing that for the Ultimate Classic Teams roster as well, although I do have it installed on my 2K17.
Yeah, I think the beauty of it is the fact that the end user doesn't have to, because you're basically streaming it to them so they can play it. Like, they're just playing your game. It's like they are in the house with you, or in the apartment with you. And when I say $200, you know, talking about the laptop, it wasn't $200 now either, US dollars. It was like $200 years ago.
Hmm.
So if you can imagine, it's, you know, it's a laptop with low space, low RAM, not great performing and everything. So the fact that he can do that, you know, with a super old laptop that isn't, you know, a good performing machine, and jump on there and have the full local co-op experience like he was in the room with us with hardly any issues whatsoever, I mean, that's pretty amazing. So now that we know it, you know, now that we know that we can do this in a pinch, like if he can't come down or something like that, this is something that we can utilize often. So I definitely recommend it for those who haven't tried it.
I actually have to try streaming from my gaming PC to my laptop just to see what the performance is like, because, of course, it's on the same local area network. So that'd be interesting to try out. As I understand it, a lot of people who have been banned do use the SharePlay to get around that with 2K, but to mixed results.
Yeah, I mean, that's not surprising. At least that's something they can use, you know, to get around it.
Because a lot of people banned for roster editing, unfortunately. I mean, and that, we should put it out there as kind of like a disclaimer, a PSA, that if you are editing, if you are modding 2K's rosters these days because of the online situation, to go offline to do that. Because if you do get pinged for it, 2K, you know, they can't see whether you're cheating online or simply editing a roster for offline play, and of course everybody is going to say, "Oh, you know, that was just my, you know, I'm just roster editing. I'm not cheating online, but a lot of people do." And it's as much as I have gripes with 2K support, I do sympathize with them in that respect, because it is hard to tell. And look, there's been a lot of people over the years that have got banned when they've just gone off the deep end in the NLSC forum, and they email me after, oh, that was just my brother. My brother was saying that. We've heard it before. So it's one of those things where I do sympathize with 2K for handing out some of those bans, although they could be better about an appeals process.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people in the forum state that they had Cheat Engine open, and they had, and I think this was around the 2K19 timeframe when I saw the most of them, they had Cheat Engine open while the game was online. They weren't trying to cheat. They were doing some different modding within certain modes, but nothing that would like cheat. So they say. And they got banned because it was recognized that they had Cheat Engine open when they were online, so it attached to their name and they got banned. So, yeah, I just say to anybody, the number one thing is if you're doing something innocent like modding and you're not trying to cheat the game and all of that stuff, just make sure that you're offline.
Absolutely. On Steam. Absolutely. Just a general PSA there for our modding community. Before we get into this week's episode, Derek, thought I'd read out a kind comment we got on last week's show. Of course, last week talked about quite a few things. Another mailbag, of course, at the end. In the mailbag, we talked a little bit about Ronnie 2K's role, and that resonated with a few people.
Yeah, I really appreciate that comment, because I do think that we spent a lot of time on that section in the last podcast, and I think there's a lot of confusion around Ronnie 2K, and I think a lot of confusion about his role and if he's good for 2K or if they need to replace him and all of that stuff. So I definitely recommend for anybody who didn't listen to the last episode to go in there and listen to that segment. I think it's around the 1:10 mark, I want to say. Of the show, so definitely check it out. And yeah, thanks for the compliment and the comment on Facebook.
So of course that was a question from Past Gen Sports Gaming, and thank you once again for submitting that. But shout out to Dave, who posted on our Facebook page, actually in response to the in case you missed it bulletin for last week's show. He says, on this episode by both hosts, the best explanation for Ronnie 2K I've ever heard. He's an inexplicable presence, but this was the best attempt at explaining his purpose as I've ever heard. Yeah, I think a lot of people do wonder, as you said, Derek. So thank you, Dave, for that, and I'm glad we were able to have an entertaining discussion around that confusing topic.
Yeah, definitely keep the comments coming, too, about the show, how you feel about it. Doesn't matter where you give that information, which platform or whatnot. We love to see it, especially because, you know, we release a show every single week. And I think that, you know, not to toot our own horn, but I do think we do a pretty good job of diving into basically all topics related to basketball gaming and doing deep dives as well. So definitely keep those comments coming.
Well, we certainly enjoy it. We're glad to hear that other people are enjoying it as well. Definitely keep those comments coming. We'll be sure to read a few of them out as they come in. With that being said, this week we're going to be talking a little bit about NBA Live Mobile. Also, we'll be diving into the 50th anniversary of Kobe's 81-point game as it pertains to video games. Of course, a few memories of the real-life event as well. And another edition of the mailbag, of course. But to tip things off, Derek, Giannis Antetokounmpo is the new cover player for NBA Live Mobile. He tweeted that out. The account tweeted it as well. And, of course, it did stir up some discussion about console release and PC release. Of course, we talked about that last week, the possibility of a PC release for NBA Live 20, as hinted at by the ESRB rating. But, yeah, Giannis is the NBA Live Mobile cover player.
I mean, that's good for NBA Live, right? He's the most one of the most popular players in the league. He won MVP. And Defensive Player of the Year last year. I mean, you can't get a much bigger name in basketball right now. So that bodes well for EA Sports and NBA Live Mobile. Obviously, the first thing that happened when everybody was tweeting out that it was Giannis, is everybody was going, what does this mean for console? Because console will always be king. The capabilities of console are exciting, especially with the new tech and next gen. So clearly it started ramping up all the questions once again of, you know, are we going to be getting NBA Live in the console space soon? So it was definitely interesting, but no, that's a good move for them.
And of course, it's good that people are asking about the console version. I mean, yes, it is about NBA Live Mobile, the announcement, and that's, as we'll get into shortly, that's been a very successful release for NBA Live over these past few years, really keeping the brand alive with the console game being up and down and taking many many a hiatus over the years. But it's good to see that when people see that, they say, okay, what about the console game? It shows there's still interest in the full original AAA non-mobile console slash PC release. It's good to see.
It's weird because, you know, I think it depends on... It depends on how well somebody knows the company and if the company has been in the console space before. And I want to give an example of this. So a game like PBA Basketball Slam, we've talked about this on a previous podcast, right? When they were on mobile, they had millions of downloads. That game was on mobile. It was very, very popular on the mobile platform. And then when they brought it to Steam, so you could say console, you know, the big screen version.
AAA release, basically, game, yeah.
You know, right, yeah, exactly. And you brought PBA Basketball Slam to Steam, it didn't, you know, pun intended, you know, pick up Steam. It didn't take off probably the way that they were hoping. You know, it's been
it
out
wasn't
now
a slam dunk.
Many months. It wasn't a slam dunk, exactly. How many different ones of those can we use? No, but they, you know, they only have like 5 or 6 reviews on Steam over a few months, and that's a red flag right there. How many people are downloading it? How many people are buying it? It's like $5 on Steam, so it doesn't always translate. But for NBA Live, just because they started out on that console space, and they were, you know, such a, at one point, the most popular basketball game in the world on in the console space, it's a different situation. So yeah, you expect, you know, you expect all of those questions and even that anticipation for another title.
Strength of the brand is very important, obviously. And as I said, the NBA Live brand is being kept alive for the most part by the mobile game. And of course that does lead to some cynicism and skepticism that, oh, is this all that NBA Live is going to be now? Just a mobile game. But as we've discussed before, that it does appear that they are working on that AAA release, that big console slash hopefully PC release. But as far as NBA Live Mobile is concerned, you pulled up some numbers before we started recording, and they're actually quite impressive. And we have to note that the numbers we're looking at, we're not sure whether it's as of December 2020 or just in December 2020. But 200,000 downloads, a revenue of $500,000 US. It is, and it's obviously something that a lot of people do play. You see a lot of people following that account, the official NBA Live Mobile account, and talking about it. It is doing extraordinarily well. So, it has kept the brand out there, but even as a standalone experience by itself, people are into it.
Even more impressive with those numbers that we were looking at, you know, over 380,000 people reviewed it on a scale of 1 to 5 stars, and it got a 4.7 out of 5. Almost yeah. All the reviews are
maybe the most
5-star reviews.
The most positively reviewed, you know, NBA Live product in recent years, actually.
Yeah, and you know what, and I want to make a point. The reason why I believe this, and the reason why I believe all this data that we were looking at, is if you go on to, like, your app store, like if I go on my Google app store, for me, it's Google. If I go on my on the Play Store or whatever, and I look at these mobile games and stuff, a lot of them have over 500,000 downloads, right? And over in hundreds of thousands of reviews. So it doesn't surprise me that there's that many people who rated the game. And it also, you know, we talk about, you know, is it 500,000 in revenue? Is it over 200,000 downloads? You know, how accurate is that? It makes you, when you see those reviews and those real human fingers that were touching, you know, the 1 to 5 stars, and actually all the comments, which I sent you some of them, you know, the comments that people are being made on it, you're like, okay, so yeah, there are a lot of people playing this game, and there's a lot of people reviewing this game, et cetera. So like you said, yeah, maybe it is a little bit more popular than we originally thought. And like you said, maybe it's also keeping the brand alive, but nothing is ever going to be as out there and promoted and anticipated as a console release.
Not at all. I mean, there's only so much you can do with a mobile game, as well as its design. I mean, I've played the mobile version of NBA Jam. I picked it up because, again, it was about $5 years ago, and it's okay. It's okay for on the go, but I miss having a proper controller. Touchscreen controls for a sports game like that, and it was a pretty good mobile version of the console release of NBA Jam that EA did, but it's just not the same. But that being said, you know, you mentioned Actually, I'm just looking at the ratings here. Over 400,000 actually ratings. They're all, most of them 351,000 as of this screenshot you sent me. 5-star reviews. Second most are 4-star. So it's got about probably about a 4.6 to 4.7 out of 5-star rating on the store. So that's pretty well received, obviously, especially for an EA product. I mean, which a lot of people are going to dislike, maybe on principle, because of the reputation that EA has, but it's obviously delivering an experience that people do like. I haven't spent much time with it myself. I did fire it up and kind of decided it wasn't for me, that it wasn't as... And it's funny, because I do enjoy mobile games to kill time that are less than that, but it's kind of... It's one of the... Strange for me, Derek, that it's kind of that space between it's not enough... And yet it's too much, if that makes sense. It's sort of too much for me to really get involved with and just be have a quick go of, but it's not enough to really satisfy me as a basketball gamer.
Well, the expectations are obviously lower on mobile based True. On the tech, based on what you can put in there for depth, based on the size that you need to make the game, et cetera. And basically what they can do is you can get away with it on mobile doing like an exclusive... Like, you can make a really popular game and then have just one main mode. Like, you could just do a Ultimate Team mobile app, and it will get – it can get millions of downloads. So,
which basically is, as I understand it.
That's not appealing. Right, and I think that's what a lot of people find not as appealing about, you know, mobile games is the fact that it can't reach that depth and those graphics and, you know, everything that you can put into a console release. I played NBA Live Mobile – I want to say back in like 2016 or 2017. And I believe I was playing it on a, like an iPad. And I can't get over the using the screen as your controller. It feels clunky. It feels very clunky. You don't feel like you have the same player movement. The control over the player movement that you need to. It feels like all you're doing is looking, like you basically, it's very basic and you're just looking for your next shot. So for me, I think that's my biggest thing is lack of depth, lack of ability graphics-wise, and then also kind of clunky controls. But like I said, they can get away with that and build a very popular game with limited controls and limited depth because, like I said, it's on mobile. And that's the expectation of mobile isn't what it is for consoles. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's kind of, that really gets to the heart of my too little but yet too much at the same time. It's not enough for me to really satisfy my basketball gaming needs, wants, desires, whatever. But at the same time, when I do play a mobile game, I do want even more simplicity, just killing some time, 5 minutes, on a crossword game or a word puzzle game, or you know, that's usually all I play on my phone. I don't play much more sophisticated games than that. And also, you know, because I've played a lot of Ultimate Team or My Team on other modes, it's kind of repetitive in that respect. But with that being said, that is just me. That is just my preferences, my bias, if you will. The fact that it is doing so well does speak to the fact that it's obviously pretty well designed for a mobile game. To get those kinds of ratings, again, an EA product that a lot of people are not big fans of EA as a company, understandably so, we've discussed that before. I think it's doing really well, keeping the brand alive. Those are some very impressive numbers. Makes you wonder what they'll do with a console release again, because I would imagine if they're making $500,000, $500,000 in a month for the mobile game, what they can do if they put out a solid console product with Ultimate Team, a much deeper Ultimate Team, similar to what they've done with My Team in 2K, that's going to be very profitable for them, you would have to think.
Yeah, well, I guess well, one thing is, when you're talking about accessibility, the mobile game is just so much more accessible, and that's where they can win in that regard. And we talked about this a little bit before the call, as far as the base price of the game. I mean, they can price a game for mobile for $5 and get a lot more people to download it if the game was 60, right? Or, in their case, free to play. And then, you know, have, like, microtransactions inside of it, which people will do to get packs. And I've seen YouTube videos on that for NBA Live Mobile and whatnot. So, yeah, they can still... you know, the accessibility portion and the gate price, like the price it is to get into the game, is definitely, or even if it's free, you know, and sometimes it's free, is definitely an advantage.
So the elephant in the room here is the future of NBA 11 console. We've talked about this a lot. I don't want to go through all of the points again, because again, you can go back and listen to us talking about that in depth in previous episodes, and it's more of the same, basically. But at the same time, you see this. You see them getting a big name like Giannis to be the cover player of NBA Live Mobile. Is it just something that they're going to push because this is so, it's so successful, and this is going to drive even more success with the new season of it? Or, you know, is this showing that, yes, they are still reaching out and getting those deals with big players? Does it bode well for the future of the console release? Or are they just, is this going to be NBA Live from now on? I mean, we've talked about that before, I know, but is it just going to be mobile from now on, or can we glean anything from this at all, or should we, indeed?
I remember a conversation years ago where people were like, oh, well, these guys don't want to sign on to NBA Live. They're like, oh, why would the best players in the league sign on to NBA Live? Well, even though NBA Live hasn't been pushing out a console product over the last couple of years, the last version of NBA Live Mobile had Luka Doncic on it, and then we have this one with Giannis. So I don't want to hear that. Obviously, there's still, still the best players in the league are willing to sign on with EA Sports NBA Live and have their face represented on the game. So I think it bodes well that they still have the biggest names in basketball signing on with them onto that brand. And I think that that gives me more hope that we will get an NBA Live in the future, because it's not like they're drowning, right? It's not like, they're putting, like, no offense to him, but it's not like they're putting Chris Middleton on there.
Sure.
As opposed to
your mid-tier all-star player. Yeah. It's a big name, multi-time MVP. Absolutely. No, that makes sense. And I mean, if he is teasing like a future cover player of an actual AAA release, that would be pretty cool too, that if it's kind of a tease for that. But I think, as we said before, we just hope NBA Live returns, because we do think that it needs, that the basketball gaming space needs that competition, needs that alternatives. We can see how 2K, for all the good things they've done, have also been able to push their luck with a lot of the microtransactions and other things that aren't, that don't show a lot of goodwill, and simply the things they do from a gameplay standpoint. All the other stuff aside, goodwill and microtransactions and current revenue and all the other quibbles aside, there are things that 2K is doing that people just aren't happy with, from a simple enjoying the act of playing a video game, you know, gameplay standpoint. So yeah, we want to have that alternative. So any good news for NBA Live is good news for basketball gamers, in my book.
Right. The other piece of it too is we know the history of NBA Live, and we want to see them come back for that reason as well, because we know where they were at one point in basketball gaming, and we know how much people enjoy those games and stuff like that. So even outside of the, hey, they're going to make NBA 2K up their game, and it's great to have another competitor in the space and all of that stuff, there's also a nostalgia portion of it, and wanting to see that name come back, because we know where they were at one point.
Affection for the brand, sure. We've talked about that before. That's absolutely a thing, and a big part of nostalgia too.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think that they can still make a big comeback. And if there's no more proof, I mean, NBA Live Mobile has to be, you know, kind of proof of that, right? They put out a good mobile product. It has NBA Live's name behind it. They get the biggest names of in basketball, you know, signing on with it. And they have, you know, 4.7 stars as an average review out of over $400,000 people reviewing. So, yeah, I mean, if there's any proof that NBA Live can still shine if they do it right, NBA Live Mobile is an example.
That's a good point, absolutely. And as we've said before, you know, fingers crossed, and that's all we can say at the moment, but I think we both feel optimistic about Live actually having an announcement this year, especially with some of the hires they've made, and again, as you said, if they are bringing on the big names to promote the brand, it would be kind of a waste to just do it for NBA Live Mobile, as successful as it is, but at the end of the day, we want to see that extra game, and of course, you know, we want to see them do it all right, including, of course, Shoelace Physics.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. I do still think that we're going to get an announcement at some point soon as far as NBA Live 2022. being released and at the latest next year. But I do think that it's possible that we get one this year. That's just my opinion on it.
We will cover that as it happens. But in the meantime, of course, it is all about NBA Live Mobile. Much to the chagrin of people in the community. But I guess we are getting a bit antsy. And I understand people saying that on social media, at least a lot of the people that we follow, because I think we feel the same way. But at the same time, you have to give it up for NBA Live Mobile's success.
Oh, of course you do. But whenever I see those posts on Twitter or on social media platforms saying, what about a console version, I don't feel like they're out of line by asking that. I don't think you can ask for it enough. I understand where they're coming from.
I mean, it's heartening to see, and EA should take that as a sign that there is interest there. But it's always a little bit wistful to see those NBA Live Mobile posts and think, I wish we were getting a full game. But perhaps in time, Derek. But with that being said, the 50th anniversary of Kobe's 81-point game is, it's actually just passed. Unfortunately, it's also coming up on the anniversary of his passing. A year since that. And not to bring the mood of the podcast down, Derek, but that was we did that tribute episode to him last year. It was, I think it's one of those things that still a lot of us are still trying to get our head around.
Yeah, crazy how fast time flies. I'm glad that I was part of the NLSC podcast at that time, just for the fact that we were able to talk about it. And I think that was a good show for us to kind of lay it out there and put our feelings out there as far as, he meant to us, as far as, us watching basketball, listening to his quotes and watching his performances and all of that stuff. So, I'm really glad that, I was part of the NLSC podcast at that time. The 81 points in video games, we talked about this a little bit before the show. When they make it as part of a challenge, or they do high point goals as far as a challenge on like Ultimate Team or My Team or anything like that, you alluded to this and I agree. It really, really is tough to do when they give you short quarters to do it in. If they do like 8-minute quarters or 5-minute quarters or 4-minute quarters and stuff like that, it makes it really tough. I feel like those challenges should be 12-minute quarters.
I do too, and there is actually, of course, a My Team challenge going at the moment to replicate that 81-point performance. The prize is shoes, which a lot of people are a bit disappointed with, and I agree. I think it would be much better to be able to perhaps unlock a Kobe card or some kind of collection or something like that. Shoes are very hard to get. They offer boosts, and it's a diamond shoe, so it's a permanent boost when you apply it to a player. But at the same time, it's a Kobe shoe, but it's not necessarily a very exciting prize compared to an actual Kobe card that you could collect. It's 7 minutes, I believe, for that one. But even so, trying to get 81 points in 7-minute quarters, when you have fatigue, when you also have the risk of injuries in My Team, which I don't think should be a thing. I mean, if you're having a fantasy mode where you can bring players together from past and present, and of course some players who have passed away, like Kobe, and are playing with them, to then add, and I guess it's game balancing to a certain extent, but to then add and say, we need injuries there so that it's kind of realistic, it's already a fantasy mode. Just don't have any injuries at all, because it just adds another consumable to packs as well, which means that's another slot in the packs that don't offer a player, which makes the value of packs even worse. Big problem with My Team. But, it's not a great prize. 7 minutes it's not enough. You really do need the 12-minute quarters to do that. I know a lot of players, a lot of gamers these days do like to play on the shorter quarters, but man, getting 81 points, and you've really got to just force it. And I suppose if you green every release and hit a bunch of threes, it's possible. You don't have to use a Kobe card, so you can use any kind of overpowered card you have. But I still think that there is a problem with that challenge. And you go back to the Jordan challenge in 2K11, which I think is a fantastic mode, one of the best modes we've seen in basketball gaming, certainly one of the best historical modes we've seen. But at the same time, some of those challenges were artificially more difficult because you only had the 8-minute quarters.
Well, I want to go back to the injuries for a second. So I've said this many times, when my brothers and I, we start a season with just like classic teams from different decades and all of that stuff, or we do like fantasy drafts that include guys like Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem and players from different decades and all of that stuff, we always turn injuries off because it's a fantasy season, right? So that's kind of like how we run it. If we do like a classic single season or something like that, and we plan on moving on to a new season or playing multiple seasons and whatnot, we will have, we may have injuries on and stuff. But yeah, I agree. I don't think that injuries should be on in that capacity, like you mentioned. The other aspect of this, as far as scoring that many points, like you alluded to, part of it is if the challenge is really hard, you might think that you have to build up your team more, which in turn makes you spend money on real money on updating your roster. So I feel like that's definitely an aspect of it. And I think that they know that when they create these challenges, that they're going to be that tough. And that some people may want to use a quick out and update their roster by spending real money. Otherwise, as far as achieving something like 81 points, like I said, 12-minute quarters is important. But also, it's something that's easier to do outside of Ultimate Team or My Team. It's something that if you're playing user versus user and you really get it going, and there's that user element in there in the game, a lot of times you can far and exceed something like 81 points. So like I told you about this on a prior podcast where my brother scored like 147 points at one half with Dan Dickow on one of the old live games. Now, granted, that is one of the older games, but you know, just recently, I had a game where I want to say I scored 110 points or something like that with Julius Erving on one of the recent 2Ks. So like, yeah, you can do it. But I feel like it's almost easier to do in a way when you're playing user versus user as opposed to user versus computer on like Hall of Fame or something. Unless you're playing like NBA 2K18 or NBA 2K21 where you can just like ISO and run by the guy.
Well, that's the other thing is that quite often I found that when you just have an organic performance in a video game, when you just put up stats, if you're playing a career mode, you're playing franchise or dynasty, My League, whatever, sometimes it just happens, and when it happens organically, it's kind of cool, just like in real life. It's just when you're not trying to force it, and when you do force it, that's when you are trying to use every exploit in the book, the hip riding exploit, or any kind of cheese, Freestyle Superstars back in Live 06. I bring that up, of course, because it is, again, the 15th anniversary of Kobe's 81-point game, and that was NBA Live 06, NBA 2K6, and there was actually an article at the time that challenged people to replicate the feat in either on NBA.com for in either Live 06 or 2K6, which people did, and they posted some of the results as well. People were taking a lot more shots than Kobe did to get that, because, of course, you don't necessarily get the amount of free throws or the amount of three-pointers to do it. I actually gave it a go for Way Back Wednesday a few years ago. I did get, I think, 93 points I scored, but I ended up costing myself the game trying to get that many points because I was just force-feeding Kobe and spamming Freestyle Superstars as much as I possibly could. And you do play in a way that's not necessarily conducive to winning, which is an important point because Kobe's 81-point game was led a comeback against that Raptors team. You know, it wasn't just a force-fed attempt to set a record.
He had to be doing what he was doing, otherwise the Lakers were going to lose because it was a close game down to the end of the game.
And that is one of the things that stands out about that performance compared to some of the other high scoring performances like Devin Booker's 70-point game a few years back, where it was really just force against the Celtics, really just force feeding it. And when you try and replicate that feat in basketball games, you kind of do have to force feed. You have to spam and use any exploit you can, as I said. And which I found and ended up costing me the game. But it makes me think, because we often, when we see players do that in real life, people go, oh, it's like something out of a video game, which it kind of can be. But then when you try and replicate those feats in video games, you kind of realize how hard it is. And we're trying to do it with a controller and all kinds of control over multiple players and in a setting where that is not real basketball, not never match the difficulty of playing real basketball. And these guys are doing it in the real NBA against NBA competition. It really emphasizes how special those performances are in real life when you actually try and replicate it on the virtual hardwood, because, you know, it's not easy there, so it definitely isn't easy there on the real hardwood either.
Well, a couple points with that. First, I want to go back to the Devin Booker thing. So that is one of the most unimpressive high-scoring games I have ever seen. Remember, it was against the Celtics. And he was wide open on so many of those shots, completely wide open on an island for those shots, and they were force feeding him constantly. So not only did they lose, but the scoring, the method of his scoring wasn't as impressive. And it kind of bothered me because they lost, but in the locker room, he's got like, he held up a paper with like 70 on it with all of his teammates around him. And he's got this big smile. It's like, you just lost, man. But you just lost the game. So that's number one. As far as like replicating it in video games, we talked about this and Shady Mike Gaming put up a post about it and I commented on it. If you try to score 81 points in a video game, 99.9% of the time, it's not going to look like it would in real life. And the biggest reason is because the game, the way you have to do it on the game isn't the way that it's done in real life. So if you actually watch Kobe's 81 points, a lot of tough shots. I mean, he has guys dangling on him. While he's shooting, he has two defenders jumping at him. He's taking contested shots. He's throwing an up fake and then leaning in and scoring over a second defender, etc. On these games, those are, if you're playing on the higher difficulty levels, those are considered heavily contested shots. And the percentage of those shots of hitting those, and this is what I mentioned on Shady Mike's post as well, the percentage of you hitting those shots is like 10% at that point, the way Kobe's covered in that game. So you trying to replicate exactly what Kobe did in real life and in shooting in those spots and on that defense and stuff, that's not the way you're going to score. If you're playing on the higher difficulty levels, you're going to be abusing
driving
glitches. Yeah. You're going to be exactly. You're going to be driving and dunking. You're going to be going wide on the fast break. You're going to be abusing pick and rolls and stuff like that. So that's the other point of it. The only way that you can even get remotely close to what they do in real life with these high scoring performances is by turning the difficulty level down, throw it on rookie, throw it on pro. And then what that does is it makes those contested shots a little bit easier to hit.
And it was, absolutely, and it was, it's so much harder to do Live 06, 2K6. You had different jump shot mechanics. We will be talking about some shooting mechanics in a future show at the Lady Culture's suggestion. That's a topic we want to get into and kind of dedicate a whole show to. But trying to hit jump shots in those games before you had the modern mechanics of a green release, a perfect release point that was always going to go in, trying to run those games doing jump shots, as you say, replicating how he did it, very tough. And there's also the pressure as well, because I found playing my career games, when I played my career in 2K19 and said, I'm just going to destroy the league in my second year, just put up as many ridiculous numbers as I can. If I wasn't trying to go for anything, I would have these effortless triple-doubles, and this isn't bragging, this is against the computer, I know a lot of people can do it. I'm just saying that when you're not trying, you can often do that. But then you say, okay, I'm going to get like 15 rebounds, 15 assists, and 60 points, which you can do and may do any other time when you're not trying. When you actually try and do it, you're overthinking everything in the game, you're forcing things. You put that pressure on yourself and to try and replicate it. And I found that with that challenge, the 81-point challenge, and if I tried it in my team, I'd probably find the same thing. Because there's so much pressure, there's that ticking clock, it's like, oh, I've got to do it. Again, if I wasn't doing it, if I wasn't trying to aim for it, I'd probably hit it quite easily and did in my career, putting up some ridiculous numbers. But if I actually want to try and do it, then you always psych yourself out sometimes, and then the clock starts working against you and you're forcing everything and the player's tired and the mechanic is going against you in the game, to the point where you sometimes wonder that the game realizes that you're trying to do something like that and it actually ramps up the challenge. I don't think it actually does. I mean, there may be some AI that kind of does it that way, that makes things a bit harder, but I think a lot of it is psychological, Derek.
I mean, I'll just say this, to keep it simple, is if you feel like you have to force it, it will never be as fun as if it's organic.
Agreed.
I hate stuff like that. I absolutely hate going for stats, stat padding. I hate stuff like that. If it's forced, it's not real, and the accomplishment doesn't feel as good. So that's all. I'll just leave it at that.
We had an interesting discussion in the forum years ago. More impressive performance, 81 points by Kobe, or the 13 points in 38 seconds, what was by T-Mac? If indeed you can compare.
To be able to keep up what Kobe did for the length of that game, you know, any of these truly high scoring games where defense is smothering them, the defense is doubling them, you know, doubles and triples, and, you know, they're going to the hoop and they're getting contested at the hoop consistently. Anybody that can keep that up for the length of a game and just bludgeon another team to death for like four quarters will always be more, impressive to me overall than a spurt. You know, like Reggie Miller's two big threes and whatnot for the Knicks. You know, and that's my opinion. It's not that Tracy McGrady's is not impressive, because that is ridiculous. The clutch factor is absolutely ridiculous. They had no business winning that game, and he just went absolutely ballistic. And he's rising up over Spurs defenders who are right underneath him and smoking threes, etc. So I'm not saying that. I just say overall, if you really think about what it takes to put in that type of performance for a full 48 minutes or however many high amount of minutes that player's played, I think that overall, it, like an overall performance, that's probably more impressive.
No, that's a fair point. And I remember when we had that discussion years ago, I felt myself going back and forth, because obviously there is that factor to it. But then I thought, that really was amazing what T-Mac did. Because in so many situations like that, the unwinnable game, or seemingly unwinnable, I mean, it's not technically, obviously it's not impossible because it happened, but at the same time, it's so very unlikely. The fact that you're even trying to do it, the fact that you even succeed, I mean, I reckon you could replicate Kobe's 81 points a lot easier than the T-Mac's 13 and 38, because I think the mechanics would just probably not allow you to do that and get the steals and get the four-point play and everything. So it's kind of that factor to it as well. But again, it underscores, you know, the old point is that these so-called video game performances, or something out of a video game, something out of fantasy, it really is hard to do them on the virtual hardwood. And it just, again, shows how impressive they are when we see them in real life, whether it's Kobe's 62 points in the three quarters, the 81-point game against the Raptors, or some of Michael Jordan's greatest performances, and trying to replicate those in 2K11, especially on the 8-minute quarters. Actually, somebody found a hack to add 12-minute quarters to that, and that's obviously a PC-only thing. But again, it really makes you appreciate, you know, that's, you know, the thought I want to leave everybody with. Just how special these performances are. We can't even do it with a controller in our hands, and they're doing it against some of the best competition to ever come along on the highest stage under the bright lights of the NBA, and they're doing it. You know, again, we've talked about on this podcast, and of course on Holding Court, your podcast as well, how much we think basketball is a beautiful game, virtual or otherwise. This is what makes it special, and those performances really are something.
They really are. I think that those performances are not what they used to be. I think when you see high-scoring games in the NBA now, teams are scoring. They're happening in like 130, 140, 150-point games. You see a lot of uncontested shots, a lot of free red carpet rides to the hoop. A lot of it seems stat padding. It seems like the defense isn't playing hard. I mean, there's a article that came out when he was at the end of his Celtics tenure where you know, Kyrie Irving had stated that there's no defense played in the NBA today. So I appreciate those older performances, the ones from like 2000 to 2010 in the 90s, and even, some of the high scoring performances in the 80s, like the Larry Bird and Dominique Wilkins duel and whatnot. I appreciate those more because they look more organic. The defense is better. And there's just way more to it than what we see today.
It feels unlikely because it's not going to make them any money, like a My Team Challenge will, or possibly will. But I would love to see another challenge mode, like NBA's Greatest, like the Jordan Challenge, replicating more feats. I mean, there's so many legends in the game, so many retro teams in the game these days in 2K, that if you added another mode that maybe unlocks content for My Team, or it's another way of earning VC or something like that, I would love to see that added, and just celebrate the history of the game outside of the fantasy mode of My Team, just to have a challenge mode back. You know, we're overdue for celebrating that next generation of legends. Obviously, NBA's Greatest did that group of legends, but maybe the KG and the Kobe and the Duncan era celebrating those legends. I'd love to see.
Yeah, but they want money tied to it.
Mm, Yeah, that is the problem.
That's the problem, and that's the and like we would love to see it, but times have changed, and this is kind of the accepted way to do things now is to put it in a mode where there's a chance where people are going to spend that extra money, and that's just truly unfortunate because, as we've seen, you know, even though they added the all-time teams and more classic content into the you know offline part of the game, you know, until the, like into the main part of the game, it hasn't hurt my team.
No,
you know what I mean?
No.
So, like, there should be, like, a green light for them to say, hey, we can add this mode, and it's not going to take away from the people that are going to play my team because, you know, we've proven, you know, we have proof of concept now. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that they could still do it, but I do also think that there's probably suits in their ears that say, hey, listen, we got to have this tied into my team.
Exactly, and that's a downer to think that that's what's holding gaming back these days from doing some of the really cool stuff because it's so much about the recurrent revenue above making a fun game, which the thing is, I think a fun game would actually make more money, but what do I know? I would love to see it, but as you say, it does seem very very unlikely to do. It's why we don't have the Legends pool anymore. You know, that way you can have some historical players that are exclusive to my team.
Yeah, and NBA Live needs to take note that it's imperative that they bring some retro content back outside of Ultimate Team when they release the new NBA Live. They should be taking note about all the commentary around the legends on NBA 2K, you know, about that, you know, the success they've had as far as, like, people talking about the classic team content and the all-time team content. So they need to take notes, and hopefully they come back with some retro content with NBA Live.
I will say I was glad to see Ben Gordon back in the game. He's the latest My Team pack. Again, he is only there in My Team. But, yeah, if they want to add a 2009 Bulls team in the future as a retro team, I think replaying the 2009 Bulls versus Celtics first-round series, one of the best first-round series of all time, in my humble opinion, I'd be up for that.
The shots Ben Gordon was making in that series was foolish. I still can't believe how contested he was and the guts he had to take some of those shots. That was an amazing series. Like you said, one of the greatest, you know, first round series of all time. And those teams were really going at each other. And boy, honestly, can you think of one series in the last couple of years of the NBA that even gets remotely close to that intensity wise? Not one, not in the finals. Not in the, you know, in the earlier rounds and everything. That was just an absolutely beautiful example of true competition.
It really was. A first versus eighth seed. And was it first versus eighth or second versus seventh?
I'd have to look. I think that it was second versus seventh. I don't think the Celtics were the number one seed that year, but I'd have to take a look.
Actually, no, the Cavs were the number one seed that year, so it would have to be two versus seven.
Right, I think it was two versus seven, yeah.
Yeah. Either way, one of the best first-round series, always worth revisiting, and would be worth revisiting on the Virtual Hardwood 2, just putting it out there. So that's the end of this week's main discussion and catch-up on the news. Of course, it is that time of the year when news comes and goes because we're in the middle of the game being out in its life cycle. We will, of course, cover any news as it comes in, as it interests us. But that brings us to one of our favorite segments that we've ever had on the podcast, Derek, which is the mailbag.
No, very cool. I retweeted your mailbag call, and we got a couple of good questions that came in. So thank you again for participating with the show. We love answering those questions, and hopefully, you know, it gets us even more listeners, the fact that you know, we do have this segment now.
Definitely, that is the plan, and we do enjoy covering these topics that you do. Always some great questions and topic suggestions. We are going to combine a couple of them this week because we had one in the bag that was very similar to one that came in. So this is kind of a combined topic from Alex Ray 33. Alex Ray 33 on Twitter, and Gilbert's Grape at Sheep Semen. Very creative Twitter handle there, Gilbert. But basically, both asking about the downfall of NBA Live and kind of marking NBA Live 2005 as the downfall, or not the not it is the downfall, but as the last great release and the the ultimate turning point after that. Alex says, why haven't EA put a decent NBA game out since 05? What do they have to do to catch up to 2K? We'll see the problem with the details for 2K has become more glaring the longer they've gone without competition. And similarly, Gilbert says, or asks, when do you think the NBA Live series started to decline? For him, Live 2005 was probably the last great NBA Live game. Those are very common sentiments, actually, Derek, that Live 2005 was the last great release. I have slightly different thoughts on that, but I'll throw it over to you first. Obviously, as we talk about what Live has to do and why EA haven't put out a decent game since around about that time, do you think Live 2005 was the last great game? And yeah, would you peg that as the decline?
Well, I knew when I saw these questions that you wouldn't agree, because I know that you're a fan of NBA Live 06, big time. I know that you love that game. So I had a feeling that was good. And when I say NBA Live 06, I don't mean the next-gen version, like the 360 version. I mean the PS2 version. But in the PC version, I think the downfall for NBA Live, when it started, was when they released NBA Live 06 for Xbox 360, and they focused so much on the graphics and the presentation element, but they forgot what made NBA Live so popular. One of the biggest reasons it made them so popular over the years was the authenticity and the depth. And when they did that with NBA Live 06, it's for Xbox 360, it started this chain reaction of, and actually, I'm sorry, it wasn't for 360, wasn't, was it NBA, was it PS3 for the, did it get released for both?
So the PS3 didn't come out until the following year, so,
that's what I thought, yeah.
06 was the first 360 release. 07 was meant to come out on PS3, but that version got cancelled. There's been speculation as to why. It's most likely a combination of reception of the 360 version and difficulty. At the time, a lot of developers had problems developing for the PS3 hardware, so I think we've kind of concluded it's a mixture of those difficulties plus the fact that 07 for 360 was not well received, and so they just kind of canned it until the next year. But yeah, 06 was 360.
Right, exactly. So basically what the point I'm trying to get across is I think that NBA Live 06 for 360, the way they came out on that new gen of console, next generation of consoles, they came out flat. The gameplay was incredibly slow, if you remember correctly. It didn't have, like, true NBA pace, true NBA action. It was missing the authenticity. It was missing the depth that was in, like, NBA Live 2005. You had absolutely no retro attention whatsoever. There wasn't a Legends pool. There wasn't all-decade teams. They gutted it, basically. The dynasty mode was bare bones. You couldn't have multiple teams used in like a franchise or dynasty or season mode and whatnot. They literally just came out incredibly flat. The game looked beautiful, honestly. In fact, a lot of it, you know, with the lighting and the graphics and the faces and stuff, looked better than NBA 2K6. But NBA 2K6 had more depth and it had more authenticity, and the gameplay had more action. And then basically what happened was it was a snowball effect where you had NBA Live 06, which was pretty bare bones, and then you had NBA Live 07 release, equally bare bones with worse gameplay than NBA Live 06 even. The dunks were incredibly, I hate this word, but it falls here. You know, the dunks were incredibly janky. They were rocket dunks. You could tell right away when Tracy McGrady got on the screen and you were in, like, the hangar or whatever it was. Is that what it was called back then? You know what I mean?
Oh, the temple. The temple, what that one was.
Temple. It was called the temple at that point. I think it was the hangar in Live 10.
Yeah.
But in the so he's in the temple and you start shooting jump shots and you can immediately see that there's major red flags, even just using Tracy McGrady all alone on his court trying to shoot. So my opinion, and I'll throw this over to you now that I've rambled for a while, I think that NBA Live 06 Next Gen was the start of it, so the 360 version, and I think that they tried to recover and they never really did. Up until, I'd say, NBA Live 09, which was received a little bit better. And then NBA Live 2010, which we talked about, was received very well. And then they really, you know, threw it all away by just taking that huge...
Elite 11, yeah. No, I agree. And as far as the 06 situation goes, I think because of that launch and that sloppy failed launch on Xbox 360, people do overlook that last-gen version of NBA Live 06 PS2 and PC. I would say that NBA Live 06 PC is the last great release. It fixed a few problems from Live 2005. It did have a few problems of its own that it introduced, such as the primacy recalculation. For those who don't remember the primacy rating, it basically determined shot selection and shot distribution, I should say, for players. And the big problem was, in Dynasty mode, it recalculated the... Or actually, I think it even happened when you were editing the rosters as well. It recalculated the primacy rating to try and redistribute shot distribution after a trade or an injury. But the problem was it didn't change it back. So if Kobe got injured, for example, and then he would drop his primacy rating down and bring somebody's up. But then when Kobe recovered and was back in the lineup, he would have that new lower primacy and was no longer taking as many shots as he should have been. So it didn't correct itself again after making the adjustment. So that was the big problem with Live 06. We had to, and on PC we had batch files that we could fix it ourselves. So every so often you would run that in a Dynasty mode to fix up the primacy ratings. Apart from that, Live 06 PC is a very strong release across the board, and again does fix up some problems from Live 2005. Live 2005 I also do think is a fantastic release as well. It is one of my absolute favorites as well. But the fact of the matter is, as you said, Live 06 on 360. And, you know, we talk about NBA 2K21 not being built from the ground up. We can see that being built from the ground up in Live 06 for 360, we can see how that was a mistake.
Yeah, and we saw how it sent the set the series back. So that's why you look at what they could possibly do on this next gen. So, you know, with PS5 and Xbox Series X, and you just hope that they learn from that and they come out stronger, because obviously NBA Live 14 was also not a good release for PS4. So they don't have a good track record of coming out on new systems. And so I do want to make a point.
Probably not since PlayStation or PlayStation 2, actually, that they have that launch on a new generation, yeah.
I also want to point out, too, you can't really say that NBA Live 2005 is the last great release. If NBA Live 2006... like you said, improved on some things, but had incredibly similar gameplay, right? The mechanics and graphics and whatnot. You can say that NBA Live 2006 at that point was not as looked at or as looked at as important, because now we were on the new gen. And that is definitely worth mentioning, is the fact that not as many eyes were on NBA Live 06, especially for the PC.
It was definitely overlooked. It was overlooked, and that was the issue, yeah.
Right, exactly. So, unfortunately, NBA Live 06 for Xbox 360 didn't have the depth that it had for the PS2 and PC version, right?
No.
So, yeah, that's the problem. That's the biggest problem, is the fact that it didn't have that authenticity and depth. And basically, let's be honest, you go back and play NBA 2K6, their main competitor on Xbox 360, and then you play NBA Live 06 on Xbox 360, and NBA 2K6 is a more fun basketball game. It does more. It does more right.
There's much more to it. The depth is so important. We've talked about that, and we've talked about that with Live struggling in recent years with that lack of depth and that lack of focus on the NBA side of things. And you've covered it. Live 06 didn't have that depth. It cut out All-Star Weekend. It cut out Dynasty. It didn't even have the Freestyle Superstars of the 06 of the last-gen version, so it felt very bare bones. 07 brought in Freestyle Superstars slightly differently. It brought back Dynasty. It brought back All-Star Weekend, but it also brought back gameplay that was, as you say, was even worse. They did correct course in 08, and then 09 and 10 were much better. So I also think we need to give credit to those later releases on the 360 as well, than before the last three before the collapse with Elite. So why did it start to decline? Why haven't they released a decent game? They've been playing catch-up, basically, and trying to add that content back into the game. I feel sometimes they've been reluctant to go into detail. One of the great things about 2K is that they've done a lot of things. As 2K were on the rise and becoming the dominant brand in basketball gaming, they were doing things that they didn't necessarily have to do as far as the bare basics of a game, but they put it in anyway, and people appreciated that depth. It does come back to depth. And look at things like what they've been doing with My League. Even though the franchise experience is no longer the flagship mode, and the most popular experience in the game, it's no longer that, they've done so much with my league and now my NBA over the years meanwhile, NBA Live has brought back a quote-unquote streamlined franchise experience in NBA Live 18 and 19, which was somehow even worse than their bare-bones mode that they had in 14 to 16, which was somehow even shallower than what they'd done on the previous generation. So it's one of those things where Live has kind of done the bare minimum and as you said, lost things like the Legends Pool, the All-Decade, the Decade All-Stars teams, and it hasn't come back. They haven't been doing those little things that excite people and keep people hooked on the game. On top of missteps with gameplay, of course. So between playing catch-up and not doing enough of the little things and putting in so much detail that... There are things in 2K right now with franchise mode, with my NBA, my league, whatever, at the moment, and even my career to a certain extent. Even my team, there's more than anybody can really play in a year, which is kind of a down on one side, but at the same time, you're never left wanting more. And NBA Live, that's the best, I think the way I'd put it, is not only has the quality of the gameplay left you wanting, but the overall product has left you wanting more, whether it's the experience on the sticks or being able to get sink your teeth into a mode. NBA Live since then, in trying to play catch-up with 2K and not doing enough year to year, it has left us wanting more, and that's why they haven't been able to put out a great game to that level of a 2005 or an 06 last gen. Since then, we've just been left wanting more every year.
They stopped being innovative.
Yep.
In all the ways that they could be. They stopped putting time and resources into the series, and that's why I say don't always blame the developers. This comes from the suits, how much money, time, and resources that they allot for the games. And I also think that they stopped, and this goes way high up, they stopped seeing the big picture and realizing that they have to target all demographics. Not just the teen demographic, the young adult demographic, the late 20s or early 30s, mid 30s, late 30s demographics, that depth is so important in that, people want to use these players that they grew up watching or that they see on these highlight reels. They want to use the Tracy McGrady's and the Kobe Bryant's and the Shaquille O'Neal's and whatnot, and they want to have more flexibility with those players to be able to use them in offline and whatnot, and they want to see respect paid to the legends and the classic players. And it's not just that. It's the fact that, like you said, depth does is it keeps players on the game longer, right? And what it does is it makes people want to spend extra money. I hate microtransactions, but it's true. If there's a ton of content and people want to get to that content and they think the fastest way to get to that content is to spend money, they will, right? So I think that depth is so important from a bottom line standpoint, but also it's all about playtime, right? How many people are on this game? How long are they staying on this game? Well, if you have good gameplay, a solid gameplay base, and your game is deep, that's what's going to keep players on the game. And I don't think they've focused enough on that, and I don't think that they focused on all audiences, and they tried so hard recently in their most recent release to target the teen demographic, and it backfired.
And, of course, you want people spending time on the game. This has been a problem with 2K, is that a lot of the time spent is grinding really hard and not really enjoying the experience. If you want people sinking hours into the game, ideally, and this is where 2K has been getting away with it, you want people to enjoy it. It shouldn't just be a grind. You can say, oh, look, you spent 40 hours in my career. And like, yeah, that was just to get my player up to a point where I wanted to play it. Live has actually been better about that in the one. I'll definitely give them that. But the final part of the question, what do I have to do to catch up to 2K? It is about polishing, as we said before, polishing that gameplay release. And as we've said here, depth. You simply have to do it. I remember having a conversation with a live developer around about Live 2004, and he said, should we really have 10 day contracts in the game? And I said, man, yeah. And I think that's kind of when it started, that they stopped innovating in some ways. And of course they did bring in All-Star Weekend the next year with 2005. But yes, all the details that you think are kind of unnecessary and overkill, 2K has put them in the game. And that's the depth we're talking about. So Live has to have those things. It has those staples from years ago. a game that comes out in 2021, 2022 should not be less, should not be more as shallow as a game that came out in 1995. It should not be missing modes, staple modes and features that were there in 95. Everything needs to work properly. It needs to have that depth. And of course, the gameplay is paramount, as we always say. But yeah, what Live needs to do is to have that depth, great gameplay and the depth to keep people hooked. And they need to look at all those little details that the 2K has just done over the years. When they were, as I said, when they were building up the game all those for all those years, and they were doing things that probably a lot of people saw as unnecessary or they didn't care about, but there was also that dedicated franchise the franchise community that was really they did care about it. And then when they added career modes and other things, they kept adding those little details that those gamers cared about. And so it got to the point where all the game modes, even if they have their problems, are still, as you said, very deep. So Live can't put out that bare bones product. And that's, yeah, at the end of the day, avoiding that and also making sure the gameplay is up to scratch and it doesn't feel like it's a generation or two behind, that is what Live needs to do to catch up. And hopefully with all this time off and rebuilding the team and bringing in some people and obviously keeping the brand alive with NBA Live Mobile, as we said, hopefully that's what they're doing.
In order to compete, to keep it simple, is they have to make a good, deep, fun basketball game and market the hell out of it. That will compete. That's it. You know, make a good, deep, fun basketball game and promote it. That's it. And do a damn good job promoting it. Because basically people want something fresh right now. And if you give them a new gameplay experience that's fun with less frustration than what they get with 2K, and it's fresh, new, et cetera, and you give them, you know, you appeal to more than one demographic and whatnot, and you have depth that can keep these guys on the game and wanting to promote the game and all of that stuff, you're a winner at that point. So that's really what it is. It's, you know, make a good, deep, fun basketball game and market the hell out of it.
And one more point I'll also say, as far as, because I do think there are things that they should look to borrow from 2K, but things like what they've done with the city, where you're skateboarding around the city, for example, or cycling around the city in my career, in 2K21 Next Gen, although there are things, I mean, 2K has focused on that when they should be focusing on some other things, but the underlying experience of 2K is still pretty solid, and far more so than Live has been in recent generations, recent decades, basically. So you don't want to start with that. 2K didn't start by making a skateboard game. They've added these extra bells and whistles after they've had a pretty good experience that they've built upon for years. So Live, before Live is adding clothing and all which I already have, but it's, before they start focusing on winning clothes and all kinds of gimmicks, you got to get that base right, the base for both the gameplay and the modes, before you start looking at that. And sure, if you can add a little bit of pizzazz here and there with something fun that people can collect or whatever, you kind of need that because it's expected. But 2K's been able to do some of that stuff because they've already built up the game in other areas first. So before Live adds any kind of skateboards or any kind of ridiculous stuff like that, get basketball right before you add a Tony Hawk ripoff, basically.
Well, I also want to point out too, there's, you know, for the demographics that don't, and there are, and you know this, for the demographics that don't care about skateboarding and don't care about that mode even, or even playing online, what else do they have?
Exactly. Yeah.
A whole lot of content.
There's something for everyone in 2K.
And that's the point I'm trying to make. There's something for everybody in 2K, you know, and they understand that, you know, targeting all the demographics and trying to be a catch-all actually can work for them. And NBA Live needs to take note on that.
And it all starts with getting that basketball experience on the court, in the modes. And that is something they haven't done well since, as we said, that launch of Live 06 on 360. So that was really the turning point. And that is what they how they failed and how they can succeed in the future. You can go back and listen to our 25th anniversary of NBA Live episode as well, our two-part series on that, a two-part episode on the 25th anniversary. We go into the rise and fall. But I think that's in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do want to say that I want to end this section with, yeah, I do think that they're going to come out with NBA Live for console. I do think that they still have some momentum, and you heard about NBA Live Mobile earlier in the podcast. I think they have momentum with the brand as well. They're still signing on the biggest stars to represent NBA Live, etc. So, yeah, I think that my opinion is I think over the next couple months we're going to hear something. That's just my opinion. Obviously, I have nothing for sure, but that's just my opinion.
Certainly by the EA's event, which is their ultimate event to E3, the EA Play, that's their name,
right?
It?
Exactly.
EA Play, which again is around that time in June. So, usually around the finals time. So we shall see. The last question this week comes from Lady Culture. Shout out to you as always. We also do have another question, as we said before, in reserve about shooting mechanics. We want to make that into a full discussion because that is a great topic to dive into sometime. But Lady Culture, she also sent us through another question this week. She is about to start a franchise in NBA 2K. She's got an upcoming 2005 roster mod for 2K11. That alone is very cool to hear about, getting another retro season mod for 2K11. It's going to be an alternate history with the Charlotte Bobcats, this time with Michael Jordan as the owner. Wants to get our predictions for a win-loss estimate in real life for a fantasy expansion team in the 2004-2005 season. And basically what we think of the team. The team that she's putting together with the 2005, as of the 2005 rosters, and again for the expansion, Charlotte Bobcats, Gary Payton, Vince Carter, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, and Chris Anderson as the starters, a bench of Earl Boykins, Wong Zizi, Keon Clark, Jerome Williams, Sean Kemp making a comeback, and Walter Herman, and Jason Capono. Obviously a lot of blast from the past names there, Derek. Am I remembering incorrectly, or is Walter Herman one of your virtual hardwood legends?
Oh, he's absolutely a virtual hardwood legend, a huge video game legend. We just used him last night when we were doing the remote play together.
Glorious
because
hair.
Because we have... Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, they don't call him Fabio for nothing.
That's right, yeah.
And like I said on a previous podcast, you know, when he does something on the court, we say, I can't believe it. So, like, you know, I can't believe it's butter for the Fabio margarine commercials, et cetera. So, yeah, he's a huge legend in our house. And what people don't realize about Walter Herman, I think it's actually Ehrman, but, you know, it's spelled Herman, about Walter Ehrman, is that he was an international legend. He was a very good player. I believe he won league MVP. I think he has a few international titles as well. And he did have stints in the NBA with the Bobcats and then the Pistons as well. Our memories on video games go all the way up to like NBA 2K11 because he was still, you know, in the rosters and whatnot. The other part, before I comment on that team and that roster and how they would do, it is cool to see new rosters made for NBA 2K11 because we don't have a URB or UBR for that game. And when I've talked at length about the 91, 92, 96, 97 rosters, et cetera, for that game, and those rosters, those single season rosters, are so well done. So it's really cool to see that somebody's diving into some 2000s rosters as well. Now, how would that 0405 team do? Can you read me the starting lineup again?
So it's Gary Payton, Vince Carter, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, and Chris Anderson, Birdman.
I think they would do great.
That's a lot better than the real Bobcats were at the time, yeah.
Well, I think the thing is with this is that Gary Payton is around 36, I think, at that time. 36 years old, 37 years old. You said Vince Carter, right?
Yes.
That's a huge job. I mean, he's in his prime.
Still in his prime,
at that point. Right, exactly. Christian Laettner is towards the end of his career. Chris Anderson is a young piece who's going to be flying around the rim. I don't see why that team, and depth-wise, I heard Keon Clark in there. Could they be a playoff team?
In 2005, probably. Possibly.
In the East, yeah. I mean, the East was really weak. I think they were winning only about 35% of the games. I think that Gary Payton and Vince Carter would actually play well off of each other. And I think there's a lot of energy on the bench. So, yeah, I think that team could sneak into the playoffs.
And, of course, that's Grant Hill's comeback year, 2005.
Right, exactly. Was Grant Hill on the roster?
Grant Hill's a small forward, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, my God. No, that team can make the playoffs. Grant Hill was moving better than people think. In fact, he was his comeback year. He was an all-star. He averaged 20 points per game, I think. in that season. So yeah, no, I absolutely think that that team can be a playoff team. In fact, they might even be able to sneak into a top five, into a top five seed.
I'm looking at the bench, and I love the presence of Sean Kemp on here, because Sean Kemp made a comeback in my Live 06 dynasty with the Bulls in the NBA Live 06. So I'm a big fan of seeing Sean. I like Sean Kemp as well, but it's great to see him making the comeback on the bench. At that point, he would have been out of the league about just the one season. So definitely feasible. He wasn't too bad with the Magic. I mean, if he continued to trim down, he probably would have had a few more years as a pretty solid big, especially coming off the bench. Capono was a great shooter there for a while. Probably another player who would do very well in the NBA these days, Jason Capono, with the way they've given the green light to shoot. I mean, Kyle Korver became an all-star thanks to that style of play.
No, absolutely. I want to bring up something about Sean Kemp, too, for those who don't remember. He did try to make a comeback, and I think it was late 2006 for the 06-07 season, and he had dropped almost all of the bad weight. There's still video out there of him making that comeback, and he tried to, and George Karl, I want to say, said that he looked really good when he tried out, he was playing in the summer or whatever. And I want to say that he was going to join the Denver Nuggets if that's because he tried out for George Karl at the time. So wouldn't it have been cool to see Sean Kemp with Carmelo Anthony and Allen Iverson?
Oh, it definitely would have been.
That was a possibility. So for those who don't know, who listen to this podcast, look up Sean Kemp's attempted comeback. And that video is still on YouTube, and there's articles still about it. And he, you know, that really heavy, overweight Sean Kemp that we saw with the Orlando Magic in 02-03 and whatnot, that was gone. He had slimmed down. He looked really thin, and he was moving really well. So it's too bad that they didn't give him a chance, because I think that in 06-07, I think he would have been 37. So he wasn't an old man. He could have had a couple years left.
I do remember that. I'll have to look it up and reminisce about that with some of the articles, and of course, as you said, the YouTube video about it. I think that was actually one of the reasons why, because there was all that talk of him making a comeback, why I had him come back for the Bulls in my 06 dynasty. So it's definitely topical to do that. And once again, if you drop that weight it's definitely a solid big off the bench, possibly even getting to the starting lineup over Leighton Aurora, Chris Anderson at some point, with Chris Anderson being still very early on in his career. It's a pretty solid bench. You know, you've got the Junkyard Dog there with Jerome Williams. I also like Keon Clark, because in my Live 2005 dynasty with the Bulls, I actually had Keon Clark coming off the bench for him. So he's another player. I always remember that the two things from Keon Clark that I remember, Derek, are the I put back dunk where they were like, oh, you got to check the screws on the rim after that one, and one where he hit like a Hail Mary 80-foot three at the buzzer, kind of around about the turn of the century, those seasons, because I believe that's when he came into the league, right about 99. That's what I remember of Keon Clark. Pretty solid big for a few years there, kind of flamed out of the league. Jerome Williams, very solid forward there for a while. Earl Boykins, just, you know, another little big man who would just, like a Muggsy Bogues, would play bigger than his small stature. I think that team does, in real life, would probably make the playoffs that year and make a bit of noise.
Keon Clark, I remember him for two things. I remember him for being a good shot blocker, like a good rim protector in short minutes, similar to like a Stephen Hunter, where they can play, you know, 10 minutes and get you two blocks. And then I also remember Keon Clark for being a pretty good dunker, in traffic and on the break and whatnot. So Keon Clark, I always respected him because he was one of those bigs that contested everything at the rim, where he wasn't afraid to get posterized, right? Alonzo Mourning came out with a statement saying that the reason why there's so many dunks on him is because he didn't care about being dunked on, because he just felt like he had to contest everything. And you see so many players in the NBA now just move out of the way, and they're worried about being on social media on a poster or on an IG post and whatnot. They're worried about getting embarrassed. It's nice to see guys like Keon Clark and Stephen Hunter and Alonzo Mourning and whatnot, you know, contesting everything at the rim. And if I remember correctly, that's kind of how Chris Anderson was, too, as a rim protector. Is he didn't care as much about being dunked on. He just felt like he had to contest everything at the rim. So I do want to say that about Keon Clark. I definitely remember him being a guy who floated around the rim and tried to contest everything.
So something else that Lady Culture mentions, why do things go right, why do things go wrong, what possible scenarios would go as far as this, what would be the best move the team could make in the years going forward. Obviously, you've got a bit of age on that team, so you would need to get some talent to replace the aging players coming in, I would have to say. Grant Hill, if he stays healthy, you get a few more years out of him. Vince Carter as well. Gary Payton on the downside of his career. Possibly Sean Kemp as well. And again, of course, the reunion of Sean Kemp and Gary Payton is a very cool thing that I can't believe we've kind of skipped over there as well. That's very cool there. I think you do need to be building up some young talent. And one thing that Lady Culture mentions is to get Vince Carter in this scenario acquired by trading the number 2 draft pick rights to get Vince Carter on the team. You are giving up, obviously, the future there, and some of those players probably aren't going to be around for much more than a year or two. So I do think that would be the scenario there that Michael Jordan, as the owner in this fantasy scenario, would have to do and be mindful of, and his, whoever's calling the shots as his GM or president of basketball operations, as the case may be, whatever title happens to have. Yeah, you do need to get some young blood in there and need to be building, I suppose, because those are all kind of established players there, but if you can't hold on to them through free agency, or if they start to age out of the league and retire, you do need to get that fresh blood in there. You need to get that talent going. So that is the downside of trading future picks for the established talent.
I mean, you look at what the 05-06 Heat did in real life. Gary Payton Gary Payton's on this roster, so it's relevant. They moved Gary Payton to the bench and they started Jason Williams, right? Mm-hmm. Jason Williams, 5 or 6 years younger. Actually, more than that. I think Jason Williams at that point was 29 or 30. And they moved Jason Williams into the starting lineup, and it paid dividends, and they had that veteran presence off the bench. So with that team, and you think about, her starting lineup and Gary Payton's around 36, 37, aging there, what you want is in a year or two, push him to the bench, and maybe in basketball classics, guys, Joss and Dave are going to love me mentioning this again, but maybe you bring in a young guy who has poise to put in with Vince Carter and Grant Hill, somebody like Kirk Heinrich. You know what I mean? Or maybe, a guy with a steady hand at the point guard position who's younger, who represents a toughness, but also represents the future.
Definitely, definitely. But that's a pretty entertaining squad that's been put together there. I think if that did happen in real life, it's got to be definitely better than the Bobcats with Rookie of the Year Emeka Okafor. I was happy to see Ben Gordon get the Sixth Man of the Year that year, but I felt he could have been Rookie of the Year too.
Well, I want to point something out really quick before I lose this thought. Jacqueline, Lady Culture, I want you to think about the team that you just said you put together. How are they any worse than this Heat team that just made the finals in real life?
Mm.
I'll just put that there. I just want to throw that out there.
If
you want to see how bad the league is in many ways today. I mean, how bad is a lineup featuring Gary Payton, Vince Carter, Grant Hill in an all-star season, Vince Carter in his prime, a young Chris Anderson and Christian Laettner? How much worse is that than a team with Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Jimmy Butler, and Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo? So, I think that team could do pretty well.
Something evolution. We'll get into that in holding court sometime, I'm sure. But very cool. Thank you for the question. And once again, it's great to see another retro roster in the works, especially for NBA 2K11. I mean, we've had all those retro rosters and complete season mods for 12 and 14, and actually 13 as well, 12, 13, 14, when modding really took off, and we kind of skipped over 2K11 there. I'd like to try my hand at doing some things like that. We've talked about that before. It all comes down to free time. These mods, and to that point, these mods take a lot of time. There's a lot of effort, especially if you want to get them right as far as the as far as ratings and whatnot. I also know Lady Culture has been contributing to the Stildos 2K19 rosters in that respect. Just so much work that goes into them. So I do hope it comes together. I'm looking forward to seeing that come out.
Absolutely. We need more single season rosters for games like NBA 2K11 and even NBA 2K10, because the ones that are out there are so well done. Some of the best rosters, in my opinion, ever made, because they didn't have all the resources that we had in the later games. Definitely great. And I look forward to it.
And I think we're starting to see some nostalgia for different years as well, like the late 2000s or even maybe the early 2010s for some of the younger gamers. I mean, obviously, back in the day, we made a lot of mid-90s or earlier rosters, and of course, Stildo's making those, and it's great to see, and I hope to see many more of them as well. But I think we are starting to see a bit more of that nostalgia for the new millennium as well, which is interesting, and but also makes me feel old.
It does, but at least we still have an appreciation for those 2000 to 2010 seasons.
Agreed.
And that's helpful. It's going to be sad when people start focusing on that. Hopefully they never do, but if people start focusing on that and they just do 2010 to new, because that's when I really started, basically having issues with the NBA.
Well, we just need to make our super dunk shot rosters and we're all set.
Right, exactly, because then, we can create a fantasy league.
Actually, shout out to one of our founders, Lutz, who actually posted on our Facebook page. I posted that the screenshot of Jordan and the Bills versus the Trailers, and he opined that it's actually not Mickey Jordan or LeBlanc Jamison that is the greatest of all time. Actually, Lutz is a big fan of Walt Chambermaid.
See, I think that I still think that there's a place. We've talked about this before. There's still a place for those rosters. With the made-up names and whatnot, so
I mean, your Mystic cool. Johnsons, your Larry Bards, your Bernie Queens, your Bob Russells, your Kevin Abdul-Raufs. There's so many great players in not NBA history.
They know that the thing is that they knew they could get away with it back then. There is no way in hell they get away with that now. So,
no, not at all. But with that being said, that is, of course, the end of episode number 359 of the NLC podcast. We hope you enjoyed tuning in and listening to our discussion this week. We certainly, as always, enjoy getting on here and talking about some basketball gaming for your enjoyment. The NLC podcast, of course, comes out every Sunday on the NLC, nlclive.com, of course. If you'd also like to listen to us on various podcasting apps and platforms, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podcast Addict, you can also find us there. And if you'd like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, preferably a positive one, we'd certainly appreciate that as well. And since we are at the end of the episode, Derek, it is time for us to plug our various socials and anything else we've got going on.
No, absolutely. So look out for another episode of Holding Court with D43 at some point this week. I hope to record it either tomorrow or the following day. And, we're talking about stat padding. We're going to talk about stat incentives and contracts and stuff like that with some recent developments about Maxi Kleber not going for rebounds as part of his contract, which is just a crazy story. You can reach me on Twitter, where I'm most active at D4384, over on the NLSC as a team member, D43, and then on YouTube as well, D43.
That really is an interesting story with Kleber. That's one that if I'm on that show, I'll definitely have a few thoughts to say about that.
I mean, it ruins the integrity of competition, and it really skews, everybody loves to look at numbers, but what goes into those numbers, right? If you have players not getting rebounds and they basically are moving out of the way for Luka Doncic, how special is Luka Doncic getting 10 rebounds? So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, and I have a lot of thoughts on it, so I think it will be a good show.
No, it definitely will be, and it's much like players passing up open shots, is it not, because they want to keep their percentages or their advanced true shooting percentage or something, like passing up good shots, right? That you should take.
Oh, you got to shoot 35%, from three in order to get this $500,000 bonus, and you're in the last few games of a season, and if you miss another three, you go under 35%, so you don't shoot any when you're wide open. How does that not compromise the integrity of competition? Anyway, there's going to be a lot we can go into.
Yeah, so tune in for more old man grumbling. But actually, no, you know what? We shouldn't be self-deprecating about that. I think we have some pretty good takes there. But definitely tune in on Holding Court, which is available on platforms as well. And stay tuned for the socials. Stay tuned on our socials, I should say, for the promotion of that. Speaking of socials, I am on Twitter at AndrewNLSC. The NLSC is on social media as well. On Facebook and Twitter, we are the NLSC. On Instagram, NLSC Basketball. YouTube is NBA Live Series Center. And of course, give a lock to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week, so thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.